Last time on This Week in Geek, Vegeta had his sights squarely upon Mike the Birdman Dodd. Can maximum nerdosity win against the Prince of All Saiyans? Find out at thisweekingeek.net.
Who disrupts my coronation?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it!
These babies just saved this lame death party!
The flagship of stupidity. I am one of your hosts this week. I am Mike the Birdman Don, but I'm not alone as I trek through some occasionally sad news, some occasionally good news, and some occasionally tasty stuff. I am joined with
Alex.
That's right, guys. So we are here. We are on the cusp of March break, which is coming up, I think, for the kids next week, if I do say so.
Yep, I think it's next week.
We are not recording local this week, mostly because we're actually finding Discord's actually working a lot better for us, surprisingly in terms of quality. So hopefully the winter will fuck right off at some point and we can record more of these local. But I do enjoy the Discord, although I'm used to looking you in the face as you sit off to my right, or looking across the room at Tristan, who is down with the plague again.
He can't catch a break, and I mean,
he really can't.
Like he's like, I want to come record with you guys, and then we took a look at him. We're like, no,
yeah, get you the go fuck away. Out of here,
you go away, foul, diseased beast.
Poor guy.
Well, like, you know what I think I'm gonna do? I'm gonna print a picture of my face, and we're gonna tape it to the side of one of your chairs so that you can look at me every time I'm talking.
Yeah, because right now I'm literally delivering the show to Ayla. I'm looking her in the face and she's just looking at me like, why are you talking to me, human?
Wow.
Ayla, are you a stupid cat? Yes, you are. So anyway, guys, we got a lot of stuff to talk about in the show. We actually are going to begin sort of a special thing over the next couple of weeks to next month and a half. Actually, our good friends over at Inside Editions, the guys who helped us cover the Fallout official cookbook, are sending us a bunch of stuff for Satan's Pantry. And we're going to be doing selections from the Elder Scrolls, the official cookbook. And then we're going to be doing stuff from the WWE cookbook. So we may be, I don't know, making Rusev Machka macaroni or something. Fuck, I don't know. But that should be a lot of fun.
Macaroni.
Yes, or
hey, I wonder
Lana's.
If CM Punk's ever going to get his ice cream bars or something.
Oh, my God. Yeah, right, like he's going to be in the back. I'm trying to think of what else we're going to be talking about on this show. We got a lot of stuff coming around from the world of entertainment. Some of this news broke today. We're talking about that when we get to our news segment. For reviews this week, we're going to be talking about Crackdown 3, which came out on the Xbox Live Game Pass a couple of weeks ago. We're also going to be talking about a Star Trek movie collection that I had a chance to get from Paramount Home Entertainment. And finally, we're going to be talking about something from PDP, and that's going to be their Level 50 PS4 gaming headset. And that was something Alex took a look at.
Yeah,
and of course,
spending this afternoon, you know, just double checking, reviewing them, because it was the wired and the wireless ones. So in going through it, I was playing like all these different types of music to sort of get a feel for it. And I ended up playing a bunch of classical music because I figured that's the best range. And then it got me thinking about my grandpa and how he used to listen to it. And then I was crying like a little bitch for like 3 hours. I'm not even kidding. I was just
like, oh,
the music's so beautiful and I miss grandpa. So then I had to play some Anthem and kill a bunch of things so I'd stop crying.
Wow. All right. So we got a lot of good we got a lot of good stuff coming up on the show this week. I'm trying to think, as we usually talk about what we've been up to over the last couple of weeks. I myself have been working with Terrible Warriors. As you guys know, I do the Cambridge Chronicles, which is sort of the side project of Terrible Warriors, but I've been running something for their Patreon, which is their tip games, where people can pay to join a monthly game run by me or Justin, which is typically, could be Masks, it could be D&D, it could be any number of different games and our properties. And I ran Ravenloft for them last week, and it went tremendously well. I want to say I actually had a couple of my players on the cusp of crying, because we had this really emotional moment at the end. And literally, Ravenloft is this dark, depressing, gothic setting, and now we're leading a rebellion against Strahd von Zarevich, and we have a celestial on our side. So literally, we have the power of God to fight against the dark powers of Ravenloft. And it should be really exciting when I get a chance to write the next part of the adventure, which I'm hopefully going to do after today's show. So if you want to find out more about that, you can go to patreon.com, type in Terrible Warriors. You can check that out. So maybe you can play a game with me if you're so inclined. As for an update on Cambridge Chronicles, it looks like we're going to be filling time during the spring. So we're going to spend the next few weeks recording a lot of material so we can just fill up the time when Terrible Warriors takes their annual break from recording stuff and what have you. So don't worry, the RPG content's coming. We just have to get it all recorded and edited, but we have grand plans. So speaking of stuff that's going to be coming up on the show, I'm going to be reviewing some games from Artalsorian. I'm going to be looking at Castle Falkenstein, Mechton, and Teenagers from Outer Space, hopefully over the course of the next month. And or so, just so we might be playing these games on the show at some point, maybe even do a one-off session for Cambridge Chronicles as a special. So we'll have to let you guys wait and see. What have you been doing over the last little bit, Alex?
I've got a few games that I'm ready to review. I just have to wait till the release date and embargo is up on them. I've got Remi Lore from Nicalis on the Nintendo Switch. I've also got Braveland, which is a trilogy of strategy RPGs. I have the Caligula Effect coming in from NIS America. We've got some movies coming in. Just got confirmation that we're going to be getting some stuff from VVS Films, which is a Canadian theatrical and DVD distributor. So we're going to be getting, looks like, I'm just going to pull up the titles that I was told. We're going to be getting a movie called Welcome Home, 2-1-1, which is, I believe, a Nicolas Cage movie. The Con is On, and Dragged Across Concrete. Dragged Across Concrete, I believe that's, who is in that? Dragged Across Concrete. I know I've heard the title. I think I saw a preview for it on a trailer. And that they're a company that releases a lot of, like in the 90s, it would have been direct to video stuff, like action mm-hmm. movies. What they do is they do limited theatrical runs, and then they also do, it's a Mel Gibson, Vince Vaughn movie.
That's such a strange combination.
With Michael J. White in it, too, and Don Johnson.
Yes. I'm down for that.
Yeah, so as they come out, we'll be getting those for review.
Fantastic. Speaking of stuff, I just got at the door a few minutes ago. Next week, I'll have my review of Creed 2, which is the sequel to Creed from, I think, last year or the year before last. Either way, it was friggin' fantastic. Oh, yeah. And then I also have Fantastic Beasts. I think it's called The Crimes of Grindelwald. So I got to go back and watch the first Fantastic Beasts before I can review this one. So that'll be a date night for me and Blair. So looking forward to that.
And then anyway... And then you and Mr. Christopher also have the Xbox PDP headsets to review.
Yes, which I had a chance to play around with one of those yesterday. I did it with Rock Band. I'm going to do a few more Rock Band songs as I'm testing the dynamic range of it. But so far, thumbs up, got to say.
And that's the thing, because it gives us you have a different perspective on it than I do. I'm going at it more from a music, like listening and like movie, whereas you're going at it from...
A performance angle.
Like, how does it work with, because you love those rhythm games.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So I'll be doing that with a lot of online stuff. Hopefully I'll get a squad for Apex Legends, who is in complete dirtbags, and we'll play around with that. So anyway, guys, we've got a lot of cool stuff on the show, but without any further ado, let's throw things over to myself, and this is my review of Crackdown 3 on the Xbox One. We'll be back, guys, right after this, and big thanks to our sponsor of LibrisArcana.com. We are looking at Crackdown 3, coming to us from Sumo Digital and Xbox Game Studios. Crackdown 3, what can I say about this game that pretty much you don't already know? This is a game that's been in development for many, many, many years, and that should mean we should all be really excited for it. It's got Terry Crews, it's jumping around doing superhero nutso stuff in a big neon flashy city. It should be awesome, right? Well, I wish I could tell you otherwise, because frankly, I had fun in this experience, but not nearly enough. I was expecting a lot more. Now, me and the Crackdown games, we don't have a very long history. I played Crackdown 2 back in the day very, very, very briefly and didn't much care for it. It was just the collecting of the orbs and killing stuff. Didn't really jive with me. So I was expecting this one to be a little bit different because it had been cooking for so long. Plus, it had Terry Crews. And I just expected a lot from the development cycle. So going into this, for those of you that don't know, you play a superpowered agent from the agency. I know, right? Really deep storytelling here. But anyway, you're sent to this city that's been taken over by this corporation. And it's up to you to help the city's rebels basically free the city from oppression. But at the same time, you have to regain your superpowers, which have been lost because you've been rebuilt because you died. You died in the beginning of the game. And the story doesn't get too much deeper than that. Terry Crews does show up, tells you you're the ultimate badass motherfucker and all this crap. And the gameplay itself is okay. I mean, once you get going and you start unlocking some of your powers, because you basically unlock them by doing them, they're still orb collecting and stuff like that. I primarily focused on guns because guns is my jam, and finding agility orbs. But you'll do different activities. Some of the propaganda towers you can take down are basically like platform puzzles. There'll be other ones where you have to like do like a vehicle lockup. You gotta find like a force field generator, so it's like a search and destroy mission. And you're also trying to take down these lieutenants that control different parts of the city. One of the things you have to fight against is an AI that controls the train stations. So that was kind of fun, I found. But overall, I just found it was big, dumb, loud, but I wasn't thrilled. I mean, like I said, I had fun, but nothing that really kind of blew me away. And that's the most disappointing thing about Crackdown 3, is it's just okay. Even the multiplayer matches I was able to get into, and I wasn't able to get into a lot. I did play close to launch and a little bit post-launch. I've decided, since this game came out a couple weeks ago, I decided to try before and after launch. And one game I got into, which was really fun, is my entire team, except for me and one other guy, left in the middle of a match, so we kept getting our asses handed to us. And the other one, it took about 10 minutes to find a match. So I don't think that's totally representative of the multiplayer experience. I don't know. Either way, I didn't have fun. And can I recommend Crackdown 3? At this point, I'm going to say if you have Xbox Live Game Pass, it's probably worth it to play it there, for sure. I mean, if you've got the service already, why the hell not? There's a lot of really easy achievements to do, and you will get some dumb fun out of this game. You can beat it in like a day if like you're really dedicated. But overall, Crackdown 3 was just kind of okay at the end of the day. And I wanted more out of it because Microsoft had such cool hype behind this game, and I just felt kind of let down at the end of the day.
Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the march!
And welcome back to This Week in Geek. And yeah, Crackdown 3. You know what? It's so weird. That game was advertised for years. And it's almost like Microsoft wasn't proud of it being released during February. Because I didn't see a lot of hype leading up to it. I mean, it was almost like it was stealth released. Which is kind of strange.
I think they spent all their hype money over the last, like, 9 years.
Well, right? It's so weird because Xbox exclusives over the last 2 years have not been very good. I mean, Sea of Thieves finally got good, but it took, like, 8 months to a year for all the content to build up. You don't sell a console based on Forza. I'm sorry. It's not casual enough for the average person to get into it.
Well, wasn't Halo considered a letdown by the fans initially?
No. Halo was a system seller, and Halo 2, Halo 3 were system sellers. Halo 4 is where things started to go a little bit.
Halo 5, right? Like, wasn't it not as good for the Xbox One as people were hoping?
Yeah, I mean, the ending to that game is. Oh, go back and listen to my review from a couple of years ago.
I still have to play it. I'm still working my way through Halo 1 and 2 because that's how far back I am.
Yeah,
but I mean, I think their thing was their. That was the reason they bought like 30 companies. They're like, out of all these companies we bought, somebody's got to make a couple good exclusives in the next 2 or 3 years. So they're banking on, I think they're not wanting to admit that this generation they're sort of done with exclusives. They're banking on it being for the next system probably.
Well, now they're talking about putting Xbox Live Game Pass onto every console. For example, they're talking with, I think, Nintendo to put certain Xbox Live or certain Xbox titles on the Switch, in which case that's a radical departure from that. So, but still,
if they do that, my prediction, you can hear, listen to this now, remember this date. My prediction will be if that's what they're doing and put it on every console, it means that the next Xbox won't be like an exclusive console. It'll actually end up being something more along.
Closer to a computer?
I think what they're going to do is release an actual PC. And it will have, basically it'll switch into gaming mode and then basically, minimize or sleep Windows in the background. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to have, it's not going to be like Xbox is the gaming platform. It will be a full PC. It'll be a branded PC with all the parts in it. Think like if you're going and buying an Alienware.
Yeah.
But it'll be Microsoft branded and have the Xbox software built in. That's what they'll do, because then they can charge their $800 for the system and say, hey, for $800, you get a $1,500 gaming system because it's all branded by us. And we, have economies of scale and get it cheaper. I would go that route and use it as my main PC. I think that's the only way they're going to be able to penetrate that market. And then the games are available on every platform. And then, Sony still wins because they have their dedicated stuff. Nintendo still wins because they have their dedicated stuff, plus Microsoft wins because then they get their stuff on everybody's platform.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting gaming space, especially over the next year or two, because I know we're already talking about the successor to the Xbox. I think Google has some kind of a big announcement later on this month.
Oh, hell yeah.
And other platforms are starting to say, well, we want to enter the gaming space and whatnot. But we'll talk about that on a future prototype.
It's not like I know about a secret thing Google's doing.
I know nothing.
I know nothing, and I know for sure that it doesn't work fantastically, right?
Exactly. So moving on to the actual news you came here for this week, from the weird, the wacky, and the just plain news such as it is, we're going to start things off on kind of a heavy note, because we are recording this show on March 4th, 2019. It has been announced that actor from Riverdale, 90210, and Mortal Kombat, Defenders of the Realm, oddly enough, Luke Perry has passed away from a massive stroke. He suffered this a couple of days ago, and I think he was put into a medically induced coma, but his injuries were just not recoverable. The damage was too intensive, and he passed away at some point today. Gotta say, I'm surprised. I totally figured he'd come out of this.
Well, and he was only 52.
Yeah, I know. And I'm seeing a lot of people sharing their eulogies and their thoughts on his death online. Some of my friends are like, wow, I'm around his age. Maybe it's time to start taking things a little bit seriously. Other people are reflecting upon his career from 90210 and other things. Like I said, I know him mostly from Riverdale and the Mortal Kombat cartoon. Because I didn't watch a lot of 90210 growing up. I watched like maybe the first season. I knew his character's name was Dylan, and I think Brenda was his sister or something.
No, and people that's used all to, I know. People used to make fun like back then because they said, oh, he's like 30 because he was like 26 playing a 18-year-old or 17-year-old.
Yeah.
But people don't realize like he wasn't as old as people thought he was, you know, because he always looked older for his age. And then he ended up looking pretty good for his age now. Now, I was doing a little more research. He had a series of strokes over the last few years, but there were minor ones that, you know, didn't make the public eye, but the family's revealed it now. So he had a history of this happening, and it was probably built up over time, and then he had a major stroke.
So, that's so he's somebody unfortunate who
was,
too.
Yeah, he was susceptible to have them. This wasn't a freak thing. This was something that, you know, at least to his close inner circle was known that he was prone to have these sorts of things.
And it sucks because, like, for what you want to say of the show Riverdale itself, this was a career renaissance for him.
Oh, he was honestly the best part. He was the best part of the show because the show went completely batshit insane later on after the first season. But he was the grounded character. He kept it real.
Yeah, he like really did. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I like now as of today, they've suspended production on Riverdale to allow time for the staff and crew to grieve for their fallen friend. I wonder how this is going to affect the course of the show. Ultimately, they'll just write the character out. He probably has scenes already filmed, and it's not like television is unknown to write characters out off screen or just say he had a heart attack and he died and they do the funeral scene, blah, blah, blah.
Well, and he was penned to guest star in that six-episode summer miniseries of 90210. People were a little surprised. They thought, why isn't he going to be – like, this is before he was announced as having the stroke. Why isn't he going to be one of the main characters in the 90210 revival? And part of it was that they were saying his schedule with Riverdale, right, that he couldn't do it, but he could probably guest star. They were going to have him make an appearance in one or two of the episodes maybe. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they end up, you know, dedicating the whole summer series to him.
I was about to say, yeah, because that was our second story this week, yeah. And this is something you found, Alex, that Fox has signed on to do a 90210 miniseries this summer. Now, in the wake of Luke Perry's death, how will that affect the script and the story? And you're probably right. They'll probably dedicate it to his memory, but I wonder if they'll base the entire series around his death.
I think what they're in the writing series, like it was greenlit, right? But they don't necessarily have anything but the initial script. They're probably going to write around it where in the first episode they're dealing with it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. It'll all depend on if they decide that he had died, let's say, in canon earlier or something, and it's just this is sort of picking up after, or is this going to be the catalyst that brings them together?
That's kind of what I think the angle is going to be. They're going to be like, okay, Dylan has passed away. We all have to come back to Beverly Hills for the funeral or the wake. And what's everybody been up to the last 20 years sort of thing.
Yeah, and Shannon Doherty's not going to be in it because she's a cunt.
I think she's still dealing with significant breast cancer issues.
But in a lot of it was she really didn't get along with anybody.
Which is unfortunate, too, because I really liked her character.
Yeah.
You know what's weird? I like a lot of the stuff she's in, but I know she's notoriously difficult to work with.
And that's the thing, like, you know, normally I wouldn't use a strong word that bad for her, but that's basically what people have described her as, anybody who's worked with her in the past.
Charm, she didn't get along with a lot of people.
She has a god complex, unfortunately.
Which is so weird. I mean, you're an okay actress, but you're not fucking Lucille Ball.
I was like, okay, I used to watch 90210 when I was like 6 or 7 because I was that weird kid that had no older siblings but still watched it. I don't remember any of it because it's so long ago. But I remember watching it, and I remember my dad referring to it. He goes, are you watching the show with the girl that looks like she was hit with a shovel on one side of her face? It's like, what? Because he goes, it looks like somebody smashed her in the face with a shovel and it melted one side of her face down a little lower. And I was like, Dad, that's mean. And then I couldn't unsee that ever since then.
So hopefully this summer series will be as successful. Hopefully it'll be a fitting tribute to Luke Perry. Once again, Luke Perry has died at age 52. Moving on to a slightly darker story, if you can believe, somehow we move on from death to something else entirely. THQ Nordic is a publishing company that's bought up a lot of IPs over the years. They've released a couple of really good games, like Darksiders 3 in the last year or so.
They're basically the biggest game producer and publisher in Europe now.
Yes. And this past week, they made a major boo-boo. They decided...
A major boo-boo? You mean the biggest friggin' boo-boo they could make?
Yeah, every so often the game industry commits an act so dumb it defies explanation. This would be one of the greatest acts of stupidity I've seen in quite some time. So they announced over their Twitter that they were going to hold an AMA, Ask Me Anything, on the image board known as 8chan. 8chan, for those of you that don't know, is a site that has been delisted by Google for potentially child pornography, neo-Nazism.
It's not potential.
Yeah, it's a terrible cesspool of a website, and in no way, shape, or form do we advise you to go there.
So basically, to give a bit of background, I didn't know a whole lot. Like, I'm as dark as you may think I am, I don't know a whole lot about that part of the internet. But I was reading more. Basically, it's an offshoot of 4chan, which was an offshoot of, I guess, 2chan initially, a Japanese website. Mm-hmm. And 4chan, it's generally, when it comes to things like child pornography and that, they've been pretty good at saying that that's not allowed on their site and all this. Everything else, like a lot of Anonymous and that sort of stuff starts on there, like a lot of the underground like movements,
dark web type shit.
Yeah, hacker stuff starts there, but they still have, they have a thread of a moral code that they follow. Well, some people that were pretty despicable that thought that 4chan was too censoring, really, they ended up starting 8chan.
And yeah, that, yeah, gets so, darker from there, if you can believe,
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly.
So one of the directors of marketing and PR over at THQ Nordic announced on Twitter, hey, we're going to do an AMA over there. And you can guess how well it went. Now, for every normal question about what games are coming out or what are they going to do, you get questions like, where are the big-titted lollies at, referring to Lolitas and such. And this lasted for just over an hour.
I can't believe it went that long.
And then the backtracking began. People started calling them out on Twitter, and it wasn't too long before THQ Nordic themselves came out on Twitter and said, hey, we didn't realize what this was. We should have done our vetting a lot better. And there's one thing to be said in PR. You want to be part of the discourse. You want to be part of the conversation. You want that. But you don't want to be the conversation. In this case, a simple Google search could have revealed that these guys are, frankly, bad motherfucking news, and you don't want to be associated with them in any form.
You know what? They always say that, you know, no PR is bad PR. You know, all PR is good PR, right?
Yeah, no.
It is until child pornography gets involved.
Yeah, exactly. When you have to say that in your opening tweet, you've got a fucking problem.
That's the thing. Like, the Me Too stuff and all that is a pretty big deal, but you open up, you know, an entirely different can of worms when it comes to, even if it's just drawings or you know what I mean, like hentai stuff of underage people. It's the connotation that underage brings to it.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can say that gets you out of that.
Yeah, exactly. You don't come back from this, nor do you come back from this very, very, very easily. And they've been backtracking. They've gone radio silent in the past couple of days. There hasn't been a whole lot of activity out of that Twitter account. At least that was when I checked a couple days ago.
Well, they're panicking. Like they obviously didn't have anybody in PR that understood what they were doing.
Yeah, they wanted to be edgy for the sake of being edgy, and it fucking blew back in their face.
Well, you want to be edgy for the sake of edgy. You know what? Like, it would be bad enough if they did it on 4chan, but
yeah,
even
I mean,
then,
if you went like least, if you went on like 4chan like random or something,
yeah, like if they went there, it would be like, that's, it'd be like, oh man, that's edgy. But they went to a place that's really like they're known like for other, they have other forms that there's other things on there, but when 99% of what you're known for is child porn and being delisted from the internet, where like you have to send a direct link to find it or type in the actual web address because Alexa has unranked them and taken them off of Google Analytics, like you're not, that's not good. Like that's something that even like, remember when Postal came out, the game?
Yep.
Way back. That's something they wouldn't have even done.
No, like, exactly. I mean, it's something where the guy who was in charge of this, if he doesn't lose his job or resigns as a matter of principle, then that guy is done in the video game industry. I think his name, I can't remember his name off the top of my head. I really can't.
But here's the thing. It's the argument, the only thing they have arguing back is because they're a deeply rooted like European, specifically like Eastern, Northern European company like THQ Nordic, there's a cultural difference where this to them is not as big of an issue as it is on the Western stage or even on like out East. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And all that. It's not like the idea, not that child porn isn't a big deal, but the culture shock. It's not the same. Like it's just they're always a little more open to this. They don't censor as much. There's just a lot. It's a very different thing. Like if you go into Germany and most parts of Europe and you go to like the newsstands, you know, where we see like not the National Enquirer, but like Women's World and all these magazines, right? Almost all of them have topless women on the front.
Yeah, like I remember
it's normal to have like there's not as much of a stigma there. Also, it's just it's a very different mentality they have. But this is a global company. They grew so fast, like they when they acquired all these other companies over the last 4 or 5 years, they're not realizing that where they're playing to. Yes, Europe is a huge market for them, but the West, like North America, North and South America, England. Like England's very different culturally than the rest of Europe as well. And then, but specifically the States, like 90% of their money is going to come from the States. And if you're not in tune with what, you know, the world stage allows, you shouldn't be doing your PR job.
Pretty much. I mean, this guy dropped the ball hard. He's apologized repeatedly. I don't think there's much coming back from this, but you know what? You wanted people talking about THQ Nordic. Well, you certainly got that happening.
They're going to have to go on some sort of goodwill thing and give away some free shit to people because otherwise they're done.
Yeah. So moving on to my next story. This one's a little bit more up my alley and definitely a little bit more upbeat. But according to IGN, they were speaking to 343 Industries. And they were talking to Bonnie Ross, who's the head of 343 Industries, and they're talking about Halo Infinite, which is essentially Halo 6, more or less. And they're calling it a spiritual reboot to the series, and that's how we talk about it. And they're talking about learning from moments from the Master Chief Collection, the multiplayer suite in Halo 4, which I enjoyed a lot. I will admit, I played a lot of Halo 4 multiplayer. The rec packs and the free maps from Halo 5 and their multiplayer mode. Because Halo 5's multiplayer was actually fairly fun. I actually had a lot of fun with that. Fuck the story mode. And the studio has been keeping those moments in mind while crafting Halo Infinite. There has been a lot of introspective time to really reflect on what we have done at 343. Where have we made mistakes? Where we've hit it right? Where what does Halo mean to all of us? And that Halo Infinite reveal trailer we did is what Halo means to the studio. And I am wondering what this means in terms of the Halo story arc, because they have to pay off what happened in Halo 5. It has to happen. And despite think of what you will, what happened at the end of Halo 5, it was kind of a, in my opinion, a punch in the face to the fans that grew up with these characters.
Don't spoil it because I'm too far behind.
That's why I'm talking about it in very vague moments that I'm trying, but you've had almost 20 years.
I'm a new Xbox guy. You know that.
This is true. This, you know what? We're just going to have to sit down this summer and just play through the games on like casual.
I think that's going to be our challenge then this year, because last year we didn't get through all the stuff we wanted to do over the summer. You and I sitting down honestly on like the casual easy mode and playing it together, I think that should be our goal.
I'd have to go for a little bit more intensity, probably like normal for me would be as low as I'd
okay, yeah, okay. Well, let's do normal, and then maybe we stream that sucker or something, or at least record our gameplay and show off how terrible I am.
Oh, Lord. But yeah, I don't know what this means for the fate of the franchise, because for me, the multiplayer with Halo has never been a problem. Yeah, there's been some problems with weapon balancing occasionally, but to me, it's the story. And the Halo story has always been about the Covenant and the Flood, and they paid that off in Halo 3. You finished it, you finished the fight, so to speak. And then you begin this new round of adventures with Halo 4 and 5, and now with Infinite coming out, which if Microsoft does not release Halo Infinite this year or early next, you've got some problems. And I think that's something to actually talk about, because we saw the reveal trailer, I want to say last year, or maybe it was the year previous, at E3, and it just shows a Spartan, presumably Master Chief's helmet, takes it off. You see these wide vistas and these alien landscapes and the Halo.
It was last year when they showed off all the gear stuff, too. It was actually a pretty big... They had a pretty good E3, and then none of those games came out.
Yeah, like this year, Microsoft... They're starting the year off with Crackdown 3. This is not a good sign.
And they said that this E3 is going to be about showing off their next system.
Which means the Xbox One's life cycle, which has been not the most glamorous. And I say this as an Xbox apologist. I love my Xbox. I use my Xbox every day way more than my PlayStation 4. But now that's shifted over the last few months, especially with games like Spider-Man, God of War, Horizon Zero Dawn, Resident Evil 2, etc., etc. And I think unless we get Halo Infinite this year, Gears of War 5 this year, or something that isn't fucking Forza for holiday 2019... This is going to be a very powerful blow to the Xbox. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind, the winner of this console generation, of the three systems, I would say Sony, then Nintendo, and Microsoft in dead last.
What I would think is more likely is they'll probably wait for the next Halo to be on the next system. But you know, they had the Master Chief Collection. That, what did that include? 1, 2, 3, and then...
ODST.
ODST was the... And was four included? Four,
yes.
Because ODST
just you. Oh, and
ODST
was separate.
Yeah, ODST was like a $5 add-on, if I remember correctly.
No, it was like $30. But
was it really? Yes.
Well, it's free if you own the Master Chief Collection. Every Xbox or every Halo game is now backwards compatible. That includes Reach. That includes.
I was going to say I wouldn't be surprised if they do a remastered version of Reach on like with Xbox One X, like fully up converted. In the new engine, and then release that at like a $30 price point.
Because Reach was the last game that Bungie did, and that would be fantastic to see a remastered Reach, because I think Reach is probably the best Halo game I've ever played, outside of ODST. ODST I like for different reasons, but Reach was the best mainline Halo game.
Because every other game, I was looking it up, every single other Halo game, including like the real-time strategy ones, have been remastered with 4K graphics for the X. Except for Reach.
Yeah, so, Reach has backwards compatibility problems in and of itself. So if they fully remastered it like they did Halo 2, that'd be pretty awesome. Because there's no use in remastering Halo 3. They've already openly said, we can't do much more with this.
Yeah, remaster that. Like, or not remaster, but like, you know, redo the textures and everything. Slap it together, make it $40. And if they can't get the new Halo out by Christmas... Put that out at Christmas for $40 or $50, people will buy it.
Yeah. Just hold on a second. But yeah, like, I want the Halo series to be successful. I want Infinite to be awesome, but maybe the next Xbox is where you should probably take it. So that's pretty much what we have to do for our news this week. But we do have something special coming up from our time at GenreCon that happened here in Guelph just a couple of weeks ago. We're going to talk to a cosplayer that Tristan had a chance to sit down with for just a few minutes. And we're going to get their experiences from the GenreCon floor of 2019. We'll be back right after this. And a special review of Star Trek, the 10-movie Stardate collection from myself and Paramount Home Entertainment.
And now it's time for another special feature.
Heckle.
I'm here with Lady Di, who I interviewed last year at GenreCon, and this year is taking on a bit of a different role. How's this year different from last year for you?
I am running all the cosplay programming, so I invite some awesome cosplay guests to come out, and I get them really cool panels for them to talk about all the cosplay things, and inform everyone and teach everyone on the craft. I literally just run around like a chick with my head cut off all weekend, but it's great.
It's kind of any convention goer is going to be moving around a lot, but when you're kind of running the thing, it's a different sort of experience. Last year you were in costume, you were still running around a lot, you ran some panels. This year you're not running any panels because you're too busy running the entire show, basically. How would you say this year feels different than last year?
This year, it feels awesome. We are at a new venue, so we're at the Delta Hotel versus the Holiday Inn, and it's a lot more, the layout is a lot more streamlined. There's a nice sized vendor hall, which is really good, and it's just overall a really great hotel. The staff are great, and things seem to be going smoothly, which is nice.
Like I said, the layout has been much more smooth than last year. I know last year, the way things were laid out, to get from one event to another, from one panel to another, there was a lot of moving down the hallway and going into this room and turn this corner and go down there. Everything's a lot closer together, so it's a lot smoother. This vendor hall, it has to be twice as big as it was last year. Would you say the turnout has been better this year?
I say it's about the same so far. We usually get a bigger turnout on Sundays, so we'll have a lot of people coming in, checking out the vendor hall and everything. Back to your point before with like the layout and the size and everything, I find it's easier to get around too, where we try to be as accessible as possible and inclusive for all, so it's good to know that we can have somewhere where people can easily get through with however they need to, with wheelchairs or anything. I'm glad we can provide that kind of atmosphere for people.
Yeah. What would you say would be a highlight for each day of the convention for you?
I'd say a highlight is just the community in general, like seeing people that have come out last year who are back this year and new faces and meeting new people and everything. That's definitely a highlight all the time. And the team, they can be a highlight too. My team is, my fellow team members are amazing, and they, without them, like, con would have run as smoothly. And they're all awesome, so I'm grateful for them, and they're definitely the other highlight that goes on with this weekend.
Is there a favorite event that's going to be happening? A specific thing that you're looking forward to this weekend?
Disney karaoke, as always. I'm ready to, even though I'm a little sick, I'm ready to belt it out, as one does when they go to Disney karaoke. It's going to be great.
Me too. Going to be a repeat performance from last year, I believe, of Be Prepared. So apparently I made a bit of a name for myself. People have been asking me if I'm going to be going back. They recognize me from Disney karaoke, so that's really exciting for me too. We could do that. We could do that.
We should do Duet. Part of your world. Oh, not Part of your World. A Whole New World. Whole New World. Can you sing Aladdin? I can sing Jasmine.
Let's work on this. So is there anything else you want to talk about from this year's GenreCon?
It's just been awesome. I'm just very happy with how it is. I'm running on a lot of caffeine right now, but it's been great, and I love it, and I can't believe it's already, like, day one is ending soon, and day two, and then it's done already for another year. Like, I can't believe it. It always goes by super quick. Like, there's so much prep months and months beforehand, and then in reality, it's a weekend, and it just goes by so quick, and I wish it was longer. At the same time, I don't, because it's a lot more work, but the experience I wish was longer. It's really fun.
Do you see yourself doing the same role next year or something else, something more, perhaps, in next year's GenreCon?
Probably the same role. I love my cosplayers. They're great people. They're awesome, and I always look forward to seeing them, so I'll probably work with them again, and maybe I'll actually dress up next year. Who knows?
Well, I look forward to seeing that. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
We are looking at Star Trek, the 10-movie Stardate collection, available from Paramount Home Entertainment. This is quite simply a repack of two previously available box sets, all smashed together into one Borg cube of awesome Blu-ray content. And, well, the movies, I don't need to tell you because, well, you're Twig and Star Trek fans. You've presumably seen these 10 movies. Most of them are pretty good, some are really awesome, some are really dumb, but you're getting these movies for about $9, $10 a piece, so you really can't complain given that. The big thing here, I find, is that you're getting the two previously released box sets into one complete collection, and that also includes the bonus features. And there are two bonus discs that were exclusive to each box set. There was the Captain Summit, which is Jonathan Frakes, Patrick Stewart, Leonard Nimoy, and William Shatner, hosted on a panel with Whoopi Goldberg, them talking about their con experiences, life on the Star Trek set, and basically them chatting up for the better part of just over an hour. And some of it's actually really insightful. Some of it's really funny. You find out how they got to see the first space shuttle off, which was named Enterprise, in the Mojave Desert. Some of the antics that went on set on The Next Generation, stuff like that. And just seeing these people talk in a more relaxed environment as opposed to the typical con scene is something a little refreshing. The one disc I really liked on this set was actually the one that I think was exclusive to The Next Generation set. And it was called Evolutions, which is a bonus disc full of a bunch of featurettes. One of the best featurettes on the disc is something called Looking Back at the Star Trek Experience, I think, and it's a 25 to 30 minute feature that looks behind the Las Vegas Hilton experience for Star Trek, which ran from, I think, 1998 August something till September 1st 2008, and it was just them decommissioning the Star Trek the Experience with some of the actors and some of the people behind it. And it was really awesome just to see how things were put together in Las Vegas back in the day. And not gonna lie, I kind of teared up at the end seeing the person who was the first person hired on for the experience was also the last person to leave the experience. And as they say during the documentary, as par with maritime tradition, she was given the United Federation of Planets flag to hold in safety should she ever embark again. And it was just really nice to see these. Plus, you also get a look behind the scenes for the Borg invasion, something for Klingon attack, I think it was, and a bunch of other little featurettes as well. So overall, is this box set worth your hard-earned money? I'm going to say yes. If you don't own any of the Star Trek movies and have been kind of holding out for the Ultimate Collection, then this is probably going to do it. The only thing it doesn't include are the J.J. Abrams movies, which, for better or for worse, I'm kind of glad they don't. So anyway, you can find this on Amazon or any other big box retailer. Check out Star Trek, the 10-movie Stardate Collection, available from Paramount Home Entertainment.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
And now it's time for all the weird and wacky. How do you usually introduce it, Michael?
The weird, wacky, and strange world of the fucked up weird news, such as it is here on planet Earth.
That is right.
And in this week's edition of the Weird News, Alex sent me a really fucking strange story with a really fucking strange video. And basically, there's a company in Japan. I think it's called Modeling Studio 91. That they will make you a super photorealistic mask of your pet for about 300,000 yen, or about $2,700 USD. He has one based on a cat. There's one of a guy looking like a super fucked up ape. And you can get this service if you are so inclined. We were kind of joking about this off air. I could get a giant mask of my passed away cat Logan, or a giant Ayla mask, or Wiley.
If you get Logan, you just terrify your other cats and they're very confused.
I would love to wear this thing to conventions. Like, who's that wheelchair cat man?
Well, if they're gonna do that, I was thinking I would just get a realistic mask of you and wear it around at the conventions and pretend that I'm you.
Yeah, how is Birdman walking? How can this be? I don't know why I'm doing exaggerated.
A couple times I've been there, they're like, are you Birdman? I'm like, Yes. No. But I was thinking just how terrifying. And what I loved is there is a YouTube video showing off the stuff, and the pet owners pick up their pets, and the pets are terrified, staring at basically their own faces on you.
Yeah, Ayla would freak right out. I know this for sure.
Wiley wouldn't give a shit. He'd be like, "I want to sleep."
She's like, "Look, another cuddle buddy." But yeah, I found that really fucking out there, and it's amazing what you can do, because there are services that will do things with your pet's likenesses. I know one of the most famous services is Cuddle Clones. If you could apply this service to something a little small scale and a little less creepy, you could certainly make mementos of your pets, because the likeness on these masks is really, really well done.
That's what's so off-putting, is it looks so real. It looks like movie
just scaled
quality.
Up. Yeah, yeah. It looks like Weta Workshop meets Stan Winston Studios, like level of detail in these things. And like I said, it's fucking weird. For no other reason that I can talk about it is that it's fucking strange and weird. And if you have $2,700 lying around, you too can get this.
And something that could only come from Japan.
I love our friends in the Far East. Now, speaking of something kind of cool, and this is definitely something up my alley, a 19-year-old Bitcoin millionaire has built himself a Dr. Octopus suit. So this kid, his name is Eric Finman, got a bunch of money from doing Bitcoin. And what he did is he built a this thing for his back that's a bunch of rear-mounted microcontrollers and 8 motors that drive this, basically, think of Dr. Octopus from Spider-Man 2, and it looks exactly like that, and it works.
Now, but he's not as sinister as you might think.
Yeah, he's not as sinister. He's just a big fan of Dr. Octopus.
And, well, he designed it, and he gave it to a 10-year-old kid with hypermobility issues.
Yeah, and it works, which is so strange. Now, it's not ready for mass production yet. It's like a concept car, so it's like a prototype. But the fact that this thing works to help this kid is so, so impressive. I mean,
the lead engineer looks like Steve Snowball if he was also an evil doctor.
Kind of like an evil Elon Musk, which...
Yeah.
Debatably, Elon Musk is evil, but we'll talk about that later. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of neat just to see how we're looking at comic books for inspiration for mobility assist technologies. I mean, there are exosuits in Japan which help people lift additional people, like kind of like PSWs. There's been experimentations in the U.S. military with exosuits to help people run longer or to carry more gear, basically to take the pressure off their joints to make their backs and their assistance strength, stuff like that. I mean,
and I know in the steel industry as well, for when they're helping put in the frames of houses with like steel girders and stuff, mm-hmm. that it helps you not have to lift with your back or your legs. It just gives you a little bit extra support.
Yeah, so it's neat how we're looking to sci-fi, and we're not exactly at the point where we're going to have advanced warfare style jet boosting movement or Titanfall jumping around buildings. But the fact that we're getting closer to the Dr. Octopus reality and this helping this kid out, I am fascinated with the possibilities this could mean to help other disabled people. And maybe cybernetics is the next true step, because I know there are bionic limbs. I know there was a kid a couple of weeks ago. I don't think we covered the story on Twig, but I had it in my possibilities to talk about for the show. A kid built his own bionic arm, and it works.
We're finally at that point where, through modeling on computers is getting cheaper to do, easier to do.
3D printing.
3D printing means you that as long as you've got about $500 for a decent 3D printer, you can prototype a lot of stuff, mostly in plastics, obviously, at first. But between that, the automation that you can do using like Arduino and things like Raspberry Pi, single board computers. You can prototype pretty much anything in your house for less than $1,000.
Yeah. And then eventually it opens up so many doors, because if you can show off that your prototype works, that gets big business interested. It gets people in the medical field interested. And it's going to be somebody from at home who's going to revolutionize some medical technology.
Oh, absolutely.
It really is. It, like I said, this kid building the Dr. Octopus thing at only 19 years old, that's the innovation we need, not charging 130% increase on insulin. So,
correct.
There's
the real supervillain.
Exactly. So moving on to our final weird news story this week. Man who bought $540 worth of cookies to save the Girl Scouts from cold weather turns out to be a major drug dealer.
It wasn't weed, was it? Because he just might have been really hungry.
So this guy spent over $500 of his own money when he spotted two Girl Scouts trying to get rid of their stock in about 1 degree Celsius weather. So it's freezing cold. So initially the guy approached the girls and he bought 7 boxes worth about $40 and told them to keep any change. However, he returned a couple minutes later and said, and I quote, "Pack up all your cookies. I'm taking them so y'all can get out of the cold." And then the mysterious Samaritan spent around $540 saving the Girl Scouts from a long evening in the Carolina chill. However, this looks like an act of a good dude, right? This guy should be pretty awesome. So it turns out the guy who bought the cookies took a picture with these Girl Scouts and was like, "Yay, I'm a good dude." Turns out he was wanted on federal drug charges.
Oh.
So Detrick Fat McGowan, 46, was arrested in South Carolina. He was wanted on, he is a suspect in several ongoing drug investigations, and his indictment includes 10 other individuals, including conspiring to illegally traffic drugs across the Mexican border towards the end of 2018. They are still looking for the other people looking for him as well.
Now, here I've got a the problem I have with this is going to deter him from ever wanting to do anything nice ever again.
Well, he's going to he's going to federal prison. He's going to be looking at,
like, I'd almost hope that it was like we caught him on something else. Like, don't advertise that you caught him because he helped people out. So it's like, and again, I'd also want to know what the drugs were. If it's just marijuana, to me, I know depending on the state he's in, it's still a big deal. But like where we live, it's perfectly legal. It's just if he's trafficking, it's one thing. But if he's bringing in hard drugs, it's a different story.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a heartwarming story until you realize blank, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, like if it's weed, I would think that he bought it all because he might have been doing something funny, like, you know, buy a couple grams of weed, get a box of cookies.
Yeah, whereas in this one, he's like, y'all are cold, get inside, here's all my money.
It shows that not just because you're a drug dealer, just because you're a criminal doesn't mean you're a completely heartless bastard.
Exactly. Not all drug dealers are evil, but not all drug dealers are good people either. So
exactly. You know what I'm saying? Just people on their own merits.
Exactly. And don't take pictures when you randomly do a good deed, because it may bite you in the ass, depending.
It's always better to just know that you did a good deed than show you did a good deed.
Exactly. It's, you know, in your heart of hearts, you did the right thing. So that's what we have in sort of the weird stories for this week. We're going to take another break here on the show as we begin our special look at The Elder Scrolls, the official cookbook from Inside Editions. And then we have a final review from Alex, who is taking a look at the level 50 PDP PS4 gaming headset. So we'll be back right after this, right here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
Wonderful! Time for a celebration! Cheese for everyone!
I used to be an adventurer like you. Then I took an arrow in the knee.
Oh yes! Yes, the kindly stranger.
I've been waiting for you to return to consummate our love.
Let me guess. Someone stole your sweet roll.
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, where we decided to take a walk down the Devil's Grocery aisle. However, for the next few weeks here on the show on Twig, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. Thanks to our good friends over at Insight Editions, and a big thanks to Eric over there, we're going to be taking a look at the Elder Scrolls, the official cookbook, recipes from Skyrim, Morrowind, and across Tamriel. This book is by Chelsea Munro Cassiel, and we're going to be looking at, well, some recipes from the famous video game series by Bethesda. Now, hopefully these recipes won't glitch out and we'll get stuck into the environment and these things won't suck. That's our high goal here. So over the next few weeks, we're going to try things that are more iconic from the game. So currently, we're going to be looking at sweet rolls in today's show, which is one of the most iconic desserts from Skyrim itself. Then the following week, we'll look at salt rice porridge. After that, we're going to look at, I think, a leek and cheese crostata. And then to finish off our Skyrim experience, we're going to try something that the cat people, the Khajiit, love to have, and that's the illegal drug skooma, which is a kind of a different kind of alcoholic drink. We're going to try that. But the cool thing about that one is it has to steep for a few weeks. So we're going to be making it literally right after we finish the show today. So I'm going to be joined with my co-host, Alex.
Yes, I can't wait.
And I'm also joined by my wife, Blair, who's been slaving away into the kitchens of Tamriel over the course of the day today, as we've made a bunch of these in advance, but we haven't made the skooma yet. So anyway, first things first, we're going to try the sweet roll. We're all going to take a bite, and then we will kind of let Blair talk about the cooking experience that she had making these. These look exactly like they do in the game. They've got this really nice kind of glaze on them. They're soft. They're kind of pillowy.
They look like a giant donut.
Yeah. Now, the cool thing is, when I got the press kit for this game, they actually, or this game, this cookbook, they actually sent me the sweet roll molds for this. So these look remarkably on point to the actual video game itself. So without any further ado, let's try a bite.
It looks light and fluffy. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of it reminds me. I'm trying to think of what it does remind me of. Kind of like a cinnamon roll, kind of like texture.
To me, like, being I got European background. They're almost like a German coffee cake, but half the weight. Like it's a lighter material mixed with lemon cake.
And it's a yeasted dough. I was very not confident about it whatsoever because yeast and me don't play nice. Oh dear.
You walked into that one.
This is why I don't record. But, this actually turned out surprisingly well. To me, it tastes kind of like a sweeter dinner roll consistency, but more cakey. And I really enjoy the glaze because simply it's a mixture of cream cheese, butter, cream, and powdered sugar. So it's extremely tasty. It reminds me kind of like a thin down icing that you would have on a carrot cake.
It does taste like, it's like a coffee cake that you get at like a local diner.
Yeah. I gotta say, this is something I'm definitely hoping you make more in the future.
And the molds make a size of cake that you could split in half with somebody else if you wanted to, but it's light enough that you could finish the whole thing without feeling like you're overstuffed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for the first official recipe from the Skyrim cookbook itself, or the Elder Scrolls cookbook, rather, I gotta say, I'm rather impressed. And being one of the most iconic desserts from the Bethesda game series, I've seen a lot of people often imitate this on YouTube, give it their own spins on it. But if this is the official cookbook, then I gotta say we've picked something rather tasty. So,
and as far as if I were to, let's say, make a slight alteration myself, this would be good with a little bit of cinnamon in it.
Yeah.
I'd make it into a true coffee cake. Or maybe a few nuts or something in it, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of possibilities you could do
absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
But overall, this is a fantastic addition to us here on Satan's Pantry and Twig. So look for the official Elder Scrolls cookbook. You can find this on Amazon or pretty much any big box retailer later on this month. So we'll be back right here on Twig. And this has been Satan's Pantry. And someone, for once, didn't steal my sweet roll.
My pen is mightier than swords, it's the right choice. They call me MF Doom and I use my voice. With each rap, my speech craft keeps stacking. If you could see the graph, you'd actually be laughing. You'll never sound as fresh, I'm a rock star. I climb the 7,000 steps to high Hrothgar.
PDP recently released their Level 50 wired and wireless headset series for PS4 and Xbox One, and they gave us the opportunity to review each one. So over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be talking about the different headsets and, you know, how do they stack up to either competitors or just in general how they work themselves. I'm going to be talking this week about the PlayStation 4 editions of the wired and wireless Level 50 headsets, and I've had a fair amount of experience with different headphones. I grew up as a bit of an audiophile, not like really, really expensive stuff, just more I like having the best quality I can for my buck. I learned that mostly from my father and my grandfather. A little bit of background so you know, my father always was into using Sennheiser headphones, even back in the day when that wasn't even like a really known brand in the West here. So I apparently, as a toddler, broke and smashed one of his headphones that was, I think, a $350 set. And this is in, like, 1989. So imagine that. He wasn't too pleased. So ever since then, I was sort of taught the value of good quality audio. So whereas my friends would be cool wearing, you know, like, either dollar store headphones in high school or they would get, like, you know, cool ones that look like they were the best because, look, they have bass and they rumble and all this. I was always about, No, I'll take the cheaper alternative that has better quality audio. That was always my thing. And my grandfather, later in life, he went blind, and he had always been a big audiophile. He's the guy that would have like the reel-to-reel tape things. He used to record live concerts of like we're talking classical and big band music onto VHS tapes. Just the audio, like, you know, not to watch, but simply because. On a tape, video quality would go down, when you put it into slower modes like SLP, but he could get 8 hours of an entire opera on one tape. Like, that's the kind of, like, he was always up on technology, and he's like, well, yeah, I can record a stereo track this way. So he was always into that. Like, he had Klipshorns. Now, Klipshorns, if you don't know, are, they were theater-style speakers that were fit into the corner of your room, and they used your wall to reverberate the audio, and they had a giant horn on the inside. These were $10,000 speakers per speaker. So needless to say, Grandpa had really, really powerful, really high-end tastes for music, and my dad had in subsequent years, you know, he had his own, which was for headphones. I sort of got a bit of both. My thing is, how cheap can I get the speaker or the headphone to sound good? So I'm going into this with that in mind. So I've had really, really good, you know, headphones in the past, really, really good headsets. And, you know, where do these stand? I've never really been a big fan of wireless headphones because what they usually do is they compress the audio quite far down in that the highs get lower and the lows get higher in that everything sounds either always at the same volume and it's not the widest frequency range. So there are things that are compromised, like maybe you don't hear things in the background where it emphasizes one thing over the other. So I've never been a big fan of wireless headphones, but so I went into this going, okay, am I going to like the wireless headphone aspect? So what do you get out of the box? Well, you get the headphones, which surprisingly, you know, in my mind, a lot of mid-range headphones in this price range, which is the $80 to $100 price range, they're usually very, very flimsy and feel very cheap. That's not the case here. The plastic is actually pretty good on these Level 50 wireless headphones. The actual microphone, it clicks into place when it's in the off position, and when it goes down into the on position, it does make an audible sound to let you know that it's on and actually going to be recording. the actual cushions on the earpieces are actually very, very comfortable. I wasn't expecting that. And that's across the board between both the wired and wireless. They feel basically identical. They're a little heavier on the wireless ones because they have the battery built in and the wireless technology. But they fit my gigantic head, which is good. Not a lot of headphones do that. So I, you know, wasn't going in, like I said, expecting much. I plugged the dongle in. It worked perfectly, obviously. I didn't even have to sync it. It says it gives you instructions on how to sync it, but it worked just as is. So I ended up taking it and going, would the wireless adapter work on Windows? So I plugged it into my Windows 10 PC, and lo and behold, it got drivers for it automatically, and it works just fine. I can use it as a headset right in Windows. And I went, okay, now I'm going to listen to some high-end audio. And the actual frequency response range of the headphone aspect, it is 16-bit, 48 kilohertz, which is DVD quality. So it's not going to be, you know, super high-end HD fidelity. Like, my setup is set up to do 24-bit, 192 kilohertz. So we're talking, like, high-end stuff. But you know what? It sounded quite good. I was able to listen to music. I listened to a variety of music for about 6 hours, and it, you know, hadn't even shown any signs of battery dying. These are good for, you know, up to 12 to 16 hours, depending on the volume you set it at and the distance and everything. And I was listening to a wide variety of music, from rap to rock to metal to classical. I listened to a whole bunch of Stevie Wonder, and then I put on some Pavarotti so I could hear, you know, just what does it sound like when it's mostly vocals. And I will say one thing, the bass is pretty good in this. It's not the deepest bass you're going to hear, and the highs, like I figured for wireless, are not the highest highs. The mid-range is where this shines. A lot of these headphones and headset adapters and everything have low quality mid where you barely hear anything. Now, what's the mid? The mid is usually where, like, the vocals bottom out, as well as where you hear the mid-range, like background audio or instruments like that aren't the drums, bass, and guitar. It's the everything else in between. It's the mid frequencies, and this pulls it out to the front, which is good because that's where a lot of vocals are going to be. So it's actually pretty, pretty good. There are 50 millimeter drivers in there, which are generally the biggest you're going to find in headphones, which do provide the widest sample range that you can listen to. Now, in switching to the wired headset, I ended up plugging it in to the controller of the PS4. And it sounded basically the same because it's then still using Bluetooth wireless technology through the controller for the audio. So then I took a 10-foot adapter cable that I could plug into my receiver that would let me use the wired headphones as wired in my PC and anything else. And I found that they were just as good as my $200 headphones that I have that are, you know, attuned for specifically for music. Like, the frequency response when it's wired in is absolutely fantastic. So I was pleasantly surprised at the quality you get, and the wired headset retails for about $50. So you're actually getting quite a good value out of it. Like, you can use them just for audio or just for watching movies. I watched a couple things. I caught up on some TV shows that I had recorded the night before, and, you know, I couldn't tell the difference while wearing either headset, watching basic TV. There wasn't anything that stood out. Music-wise, it did sound better with the wired connection, and that's just simply because wired provides more frequency response range. So, I did a little test. I took the wired headset that plugged it into my controller, and then plugged my controller using USB directly into my PS4. Because with the PS4 Pro, when you do that, it actually stops it from broadcasting as an audio device as far as the Bluetooth audio. It then uses the wired connection to your PlayStation, as long as you have the Slim or the PS4 Pro, and it uses it as a USB audio device, which basically gives it the exact same quality you would if you plugged it into a PC direct, and the audio quality got significantly better. So if you're a big stickler for audio being the best quality it can be, go with the wired headset and then plug it in directly into your PlayStation, as long as you've got a Slim or a PS4 or you want to use it on the PC. Yeah, but if you're just like looking for something that's really easy that has a long battery life, I would say definitely go with the wireless one. I'm happy with both, definitely. And I'm going to insert a little audio here right about now that is recorded using the wireless headset and the microphone built in, just to give you an idea of what the quality is going to be like. and then I'll come back and just try to talk a little bit more about it, and we'll go from there.
For this part of the review, I wanted to actually use the headset microphone that comes on the PDP level 50, and just to give you, I wanted to give you an idea of the audio quality that comes with it. It's not something you're going to use, obviously, to do singing or anything, or do major voice recording if you're recording, in, you know, our case, a podcast or a live audio stream, but it does do the job for noise cancellation on background noise, and it's very directional. I've got it only about an inch or two away from, about an inch away from my face, and it's going to do an adequate job for you know, game chat between people. You could use it for Skype calls and basic things that where audio fidelity isn't the biggest issue. It doesn't pick up a ton of noise as well. Like, I've got the volume boosted to the maximum without actually having to use any boosting technology. So I'm going to have to do a little audio leveling of this before I insert it back into the review. I just wanted to give you an idea of what it sounds like, and it's perfectly adequate for your basic game chat and, you know, Skype calls for that matter.
So that was what the headset sounds like. It sounded the exact same when I recorded both with wired and wireless. It's the frequency response of the microphone isn't the highest. Like, it's not going to be as good as a broadcast microphone, but you're not looking for that when you're recording something for either on Skype or if you're using it for game chat. The best part is it does, for a small microphone, isolate a lot of the outside noise. It has some built-in noise cancellation technology, which is pretty, pretty good considering the price point. You know, you get a lot of other companies that release headsets that maybe look a little fancier, have RGB lighting and all this stupid stuff that really doesn't matter to the audio quality, and they'll charge you $300 for it. And I've seen many people get suckered into thinking that more money means better quality. I will stand by this and saying that this is one of the best quality headsets I've seen in this price range. The microphone frequency response is 16-bit and then a maximum of 48 kilohertz, same as the DVD quality thing. It's a mono microphone, but it's all you're going to need, and it's actually pretty good considering. I ended up having to boost the audio volume up because I didn't want to yell too loudly into the microphone and, you know, make all the neighbors freak out, because it's actually pretty good at canceling the rest of it. It's not going to pick up as much of your, you know, breathing or hissing or anything unless. So if you heard any breathing in that, it's only because I had to boost the volume on it so you could hear, you know, what's the sound like at maximum volume. So I'm going to say, in my mind, this is actually better than some of the first party headsets that I've seen come out from Sony and other companies. And you know, this is, the American prices are about $50 or so for the wired headset. The wireless runs for about $80. I think it's the best bang for your buck. So in you know, our money in Canada that you're looking at, I guess it's about $80 for the wired one, and probably about $120-ish maybe, depending on if you get it on sale, for the wireless headset. They're definitely worth it. I can't wait to hear what the Xbox One versions sound like, because I know that the difference there is they also have an inline chat option that you can switch between, you know, emphasizing the volume on your chat or emphasizing the volume on your game. So that's the main difference that I've seen from the Xbox version versus the PS4 version. So we're going to hear from them in the next couple weeks, you know, their experiences with those headsets.
And that's the kind of show it has been here on Twig. And once again, we do hope to have Mr. Christopher back on the show, as he has been sick over the last few weeks. Although, as a side note, we did send him home with a trio of goodies this week. We sent him home with a sweet roll, some of the salt rice porridge that we made, and a special treat that we can't necessarily talk about until the embargo is up.
But basically something to heat him up and make him feel good.
Exactly. So hopefully he'll be back on the show. We're hoping for next week, but we'll have to wait and see. Coming up on the site this week.
He's promised us that he's not dying.
Exactly. He's like, guys, I'm still on the show. Just, well, I need to feel better. So he'll be back sooner or later. Coming up on the site this week, we actually had a friend of the show, Michael Ryan, posted up some comic book reviews. So if you go to our website, thisweekingeek.net, you can see his reviews. He posted up from his YouTube channel. So hopefully he'll be doing more comic reviews for us in the future. I'm going to be reviewing Creed 2 and Fantastic Beasts and the Crimes of Grindelwald. That'll be coming up in the next little bit. I also received a package from Modiphius, the people who are behind the Star Trek Adventures role-playing game. They sent me the Fallout Wasteland Warfare board game. Me and Alex are going to play that probably over March break. And then I have a review of Star Trek the Adventures Science Division role-playing game supplement, which actually is surprisingly cool. They actually have an entire section based on the Q, which is really cool, and just temporal adventures you can run, which I found that to be really, really, really neat. And I'm also going to be reviewing the PDP Level 50 Xbox wireless headset. Like I said, initial impressions are thumbs up for that. And then I think next week I'll share my impressions of the new Power Rangers series, Beast Morphers. Someone uploaded it to YouTube and it got blocked, but I saw it before it got taken down. So fuck you, Hasbro.
It's one of those issues where it's like, why is it available in every country but Canada? Why?
It's so dumb. And Teletoon,
you've got a cable package with like hundreds of channels and you still don't get it.
Yeah, because Nick in Canada is hot garbage. Disney Channel in Canada sucks. And it's because of all the broadcasting rights that are split up between a million different networks. So I say, fuck you and yahar.
It's probably because of the Hasbro acquisition from Saban. Because Saban had the deal with, what was it, Teletoon?
I guess, but it's just such a pain in the fucking ass. But regardless, I will be sharing my impressions of the series. So far, I really like it. It's no RPM, but it has potential, which is what I like. So, Alex, what do you got coming? You got a Turtle Treasure coming up this week.
Yeah, I'll be doing one this week. Sometime in the next few days, because when some of the embargoes lift on the reviews that I have. I also just recently got in the mail a review copy of Barb Wire from Mill Creek, the Pamela Anderson movie.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it. Okay, so
oh my god, you're in for a treat.
So I'm gonna go into it blind. I just know that she got a tattoo for a movie that didn't do too well.
So I saw this movie in theaters. That's how much I was excited for Barb Wire.
I didn't know it was a Dark Horse movie, so I'm gonna be watching that and giving my impressions on that. I've been saying it for weeks now, we got to do a prototype. So sometime in the next week or so, we should do the prototype.
Probably over March break will be the easiest time for us.
Well, we'll get a bunch of that. And I think if we're going to be hanging out over March break, we should do a commentary or two.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. So look out for more stuff coming for us, because March break, we're hopefully going to get a bunch of stuff done and bring to you, the people, something interesting. I am cooking up a new botched role, but I've got several topics and I'm kind of flip-flopping on a few of them because I want it to be the best show it can be. So much like Cambridge Chronicles, it'll be done when it's done. But don't worry, the quality will be delicious.
And I have a few ideas brewing for maybe a podcast or two, different idea. You know, things are always swirling in my head as far as, you know, topics and different things. Like, we've got the prototype, which is our gaming one. We've got, you've got your botched role. I'm still thinking of putting together something for, you know, I've got the Turtle Treasure, but the classic, you know, forgotten TV shows, like check it out on YouTube sort of stuff, like rare oddities that you might want to check out that you can't find any other way.
I like it. So anyway, guys, for This Week in Geek, we have been
Alex.
I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, be cool, be kind. I fucked that up. That's okay. Anyway, guys, anyway, live cool, free or kind. Die hard.
We'll be cool, be kind. Time. I'm going to do this right the first time.
That's right. Thanks, guys. We'll catch you again next week right here on thisweekingeek.net.
All right. Bye-bye, people.
Well, that's our show.
All right. Here's the deal. Every time you watch my show, I will send you $40.
Checks will not be honored.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek, your source for guaranteed nonsense or your money back. Tune in next week for more info and the most important things you didn't need to know. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head over to this episode's post at thisweekingeek.net and leave a comment through Facebook Connect. Follow us on Twitter at thisweekingeek.net and follow our Instagram at @twig_official_podcast. Social media not your thing? Send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Just when you think this show is terrible, something wonderful happens.
What?
It ends.
I have to go. Somewhere there is a crime happening.